It is Monday, July 6th. Welcome to an English edition of our Backstage Classical Good Morning podcast. Today I'm joined by tenor Benjamin Bernheim.
Guten Morgen. Die großen Themen der Klassik für den Weg zur Arbeit mit Axel Brüggemann.
Good morning to you all. I am currently shooting a film in Paris about the history of French music. Yesterday, Benjamin Bernheim and I visited the archives of the Opéra Garnier, where we looked at letters by Wagner and original manuscripts of Offenbach and Gounod. Today, we are sitting in the Théâtre des Champs-Élysées, and our subject is a very different one. Where is classical music heading? I'm so happy that you are here. Good morning, Benjamin.
Hello, Axel.
We are here in Paris, your town. We are in the Opéra Champs-Élysées. You have sung here. You live almost next door.
Very close to here, yes.
So this is your habitat, but your habitat as a singer completely changed in the last years. After you have started your career, you quit it again to experience something else. You said, perhaps opera is not the right thing for me, but then you returned. Have you ever regretted this decision?
We can say yes, we can say no. I would say no because I've took the decision to stop for the right reason and the decision to come back for the right reason too. It's because I wanted to be a better product. Really, when I just simply and coldly talk about this as an industry and as a business, not as a singer, not as the beautiful music maker or storyteller, just the business. If I want to be a product on a market, I want it to be good. I want the people who buy it to be proud of it. I want the people who hire me to know what they are hiring. And for that, I needed to be tougher. I needed to be more secure about my singing, about my technique, about a lot of things. And I needed to know that I was going to do that for the long run and not just, oh, tiptoeing or let's see. I needed to do these stops, these breaks, these resets to be really coldly a product that I needed to be.
But isn't it a little bit of perverse to call yourself a product? Everybody says, oh, this classical opera business, we have all these product singers. Yeah. We have the record industry, we have the industry of the opera houses. Mm-hmm. Why do you call yourself a product? And does it make it easier then to be aware of the danger of it?
There are two sides to the story. When you buy yourself a car, you buy yourself a product that's drives on the car with four wheels and with a beautiful technology or not. But you also buy something that emotionally connects. It is a car that becomes your family car. It is the car that accompanied you through beautiful things, beautiful voyage, beautiful family trips and everything. Whatever you make of it, everything becomes emotional. And it can begin with emotional and end up being something totally practical, or it can be both. And I think the secret here is to find the good balance. I am as much a storyteller and artist, a sensitive person, as I am a product in an industry. I have to be aware of this. I choose how I want to see every morning, if today I'm going to be more oriented in this direction or to another. But you know, when I have to negotiate contracts, when I have to talk to opera directors, to people, I talk to my manager, I talk to people who, we are talking about very practical things. We are talking about things that are behind the curtain. What the audience see, what the people see is the beautiful part. Is the surface of the beautiful world of opera. Behind, you sign contracts, you get paid, you pay a fee, you pay taxes, you travel, you get sick, you go to the doctor, you don't sleep, you sleep, you get drunk after a performance, you enjoy your life with people.
You have to bring the garbage down?
You have to bring the garbage down. I live part of my time in Switzerland, part of my time in France. In Switzerland, every second week, you bring the carton to the carton sammlung, then the papier sammlung, then the garbage bags.
Well-behaved. Almost Swiss.
Very well-organized Swiss life. And when you're in Paris, the life is a bit different, but you also organize your life in a very different way.
You have to bring the cartons down. Yeah.
Exactly, but you live...
Throw them out of the window, yeah.
In a way, it's a bit... I hope it will change for France. But just to say that I am also, I have to think as I am the CEO of my company. My company has to be able to sing, to, and I am a product.
But for the product, what is your strategy? Because then you really have can develop a long-time strategy. If I understand it right, as an artist, you really take care of the role, of the music, of the Absolutely. Development of emotions, of your voice, of the continuation of your voice, of the repertoire and so on. But let's stay with the product, Benjamin Bernheim, for a second. What is the strategic thought behind this product? The new tenor, the intelligent tenor, the tenor who... What is your long-time strategy?
I don't have the full answer to your question. It will come also with time. Maybe in 5 years I will give a more complete answer. But it begins with the repertoire. How do I choose my repertoire? Where do I see myself in 2 years, in 5 years? I have, yes, the luxury to be able to choose. If I was not able to choose, I would have to handle what is offered to me and how I will make sense of it, like I did 15 years ago when I began my career. Now I'm thinking, okay, in the five next years, I will sing this role, and this role. I will adapt my singing to a new repertoire. So I have to keep the essence of my voice. I have to keep my voice schlank, as we say in German. I have to keep my voice healthy. I have to go to the gym. I have to build muscle. I have to be careful with alcohol. I have to be careful with pollution. I have to be careful with getting viruses. This is the strategizing of how you handle your product every day.
And the normal tenor life, basically.
Basically, the normal tenor life, absolutely. But also going out, living your life, being there for your family, being there for your people, being there for your friends. There's also one of the big difficulties of this industry and this world is that people don't realize that the night you see us on stage getting big applause for an aria or for a role that we sang is maybe the night that we could not attend a wedding, that we missed a birthday, that we missed something important for someone that we love. It happened to me lately. I was on stage, I had to sing, and I knew that someone very close to me was at the hospital. We sacrifice a big part of our lives and a big part of our social life, family life, to be on stage, to let the show go on. The show go on means that we are part of an industry that rolls and that we are part of it and we have to accept our part in it. This is where we are a product.
Where's the satisfaction in that? I mean, of course you get money, okay, but this can't be it. You get the applause, I understand, but is there something higher as well where you get the satisfaction for sacrifice?
I mean, there is the part that maybe what I wanted to do, whatever I do in my life. I mean, my first dream was to be a diplomat. I wanted to do Haute École Internationale in Geneva, and I wanted to be a diplomat at the United Nations. That was what I wanted. But more than this dream or this idea was that whatever I do, at whatever level, even if I do, you know, when I was young, I was delivering pizza. I wanted to do it well. I was delivering medicine for a pharmacy. I wanted to do it well. When I worked for Generali Versicherung in Lausanne during my studies, I was in the archives. I wanted to do it well. So if I am an opera singer, I just want to be... It's not about pride. I want to be content, satisfied, and know that I did really good job and that people don't pay for someone who thinks, oh, whatever, I'm just going to sing with one vocal cord today. People who think that things are easy, this is not my way of doing. I want to go on stage thinking that I'm gonna go through a challenge, that I'm going to fight to deserve my fee, my salary. Yes, I'm paid for my job. But also my reputation, but also the applause and the people coming to see me from far away. There are people coming from Canada sometimes and China and Japan and say, we traveled to come to see you.
And your own satisfaction as well.
And there is this is a satisfaction to know that people travel because they want to catch it. So I want to be proud of knowing that I could do a good job. And this is why also there are moments in a career where you let things go. For example, there are some roles that I stopped singing. I had the extreme honor to sing Alfredo in La Traviata many times in new productions, in Covent Garden, at the Opéra National de Paris, in Berlin, Zurich, La Scala di Milano. It's fantastic to have a chance like this in a career. I sang this role many times to the point that I felt... If I keep singing this role, I will not be committed anymore because I've seen it too much. So I have to leave the other tenors, the other generation, the younger ones, take this role because this role will teach them what it taught me. So there is a moment where you stop doing the easy thing and you challenge yourself. And today, I still sing these roles like Des Grieux in Manon, Werther, Romeo, Hoffmann, Rodolfo, Nemorino. And I will begin with new ones like Cavallarossi in Tosca and others because they are a challenge, because I have to fight to deserve my applause, my salary, and my reputation. So every win that you have the day after the win doesn't mean anything anymore. You have to put your fame or your reputation in the game again.
We'll talk about the repertoire in a second, but I would like to stay with this market for a second. What are the biggest fears you have for your product? What is your biggest enemy? Is it the directors who want to push you, come here to us and sing five evenings instead of two? Okay. Is it this traveling? Is it...
There are two things. There is the inner danger and the outer danger, outside danger. The inner danger is everything that comes from self-sabotage, getting sick, getting tired, having problems at home. This is what comes from the inside. And then there is the outside problem. Yeah, the industry itself can be a challenge. You can have a fight with a conductor, with a stage director. You disagree with an intendant. You disagree with a casting director. These things make you tired mentally.
This is artistic. Is it strategic?
I mean, yes, if it is strategic, a singer alone cannot define what the industry is going to be. The industry is how it is, and we have to, and it evolves. It changed a lot, the industry. Every 5 to 10 years, there is a new fashion, there is a new direction, but you have to fight different things. My fight for the 5 past years have been to not do new productions, because I do not trust the process. It's not that I don't trust the people. The industry is stronger than the people. An industry is stronger than the intendant, the stage director, the makeup people, the people who do the sets. Everything, this is stronger. So I do
not. The industry then is what? The people who demand or the whole thing?
The fashion today is to go in doing a new production of whatever, X, Y, or Z title, and to do something, to try to do something new, to try to reinvent, to try to revisit. This has been the thing, the fashion for 10, 20, 30, 50 years, maybe even longer if you go to some places in Germany. And the fight here is that how do I keep my integrity as an artist on stage if the industry proposes something that is totally deconstruct? And the deconstruction of it is a danger for me, because then I am not my product anymore. If I make, make compromises without compromising yourself. And this is what my professor used to say. You can make compromises. You can say, okay, I do that, but I have to get that. Yes, I can put the hats, but then I need to make sure that I can sing this aria in a certain position that is going to be comfortable for me. All these things are compromises. But at the moment you feel that you compromise your artistic being, your artistic personality, it's the moment where you say, and I say it, not only me, a lot of my colleagues at the highest, medium, or lowest part of the industry are saying sometimes, that's enough. I had enough of this blind date in the industry, of going to a place, signing a contract 5 years in advance with someone that I trust, because I shake the hand of an intendant, and I realize 6 weeks before the premiere at the Konzeptionsgespräch that it is something totally crazy. And I think that today we should be part of the, not the creating process. I am not a stage director. I am not building sets. I am not building costumes. But there is a moment where I say, I see myself in this and I think I can do a great job, or I'm leaving this process. And this is the big problem of the industry today. For me to be a working product in this industry, I need to be put on stage in the best conditions possible for me to be serving the institution and the audience. And it is not by being or becoming something else.
But who is responsible for that? Because in Germany we have the same debate. It's lots of conductors, for example, who say they are opera directors and they don't really take care anymore of the orchestras and of the musical side of opera. And they exactly say the same what you say. They say, we see the role as a director, as a communicator of the team which is doing the final product, exactly. If we talk about products, the opera.
In a perfect world, 2 years before a premiere, the stage director contacts the singers, the main singers, and say, listen, I want us to work together in this. So this is how it's going to be. This is what I've been thinking. What do you think? And I think this is, if stage directors begin to do this, this is the downfall of their power. Because they have power, they have been brought to that power. They didn't take over. They didn't hijack the world of opera. It has been given to them because there was the golden age of singers, and there was the golden age of conductors, and now we are in the golden age of stage directors. And
the end of the golden age of stage directors.
And it's, when I say golden age, it doesn't mean that it's the best part of it. It's just the part where the industry, it's a period where the industry gives the full power of this. And I have to say, really measure my words, intendants and casting directors do not decide where the industry is going. It is the fashion at the moment. So where it is going after, it's a big question. But in a perfect world, yes, we communicate. But I understand also that we are getting in a world where their world is shrinking because the budget is shrinking, because the public money is shrinking. So what we had as a budget 10 years ago doesn't exist today. So you can't do
the role
same.
Of the opera in society is
exactly.
Changing.
Yeah. It's changing. It brings me to another subject. If you accept what you're doing, my industry, my world of opera, it's an industry, it's a business, it's a beautiful world, it's a magical world, it's many things at the same time. But if you don't accept what it is in the society of the world, then you're going to the catastrophe and you're going to destroy it. We represent a beautiful part of the society, but it's a niche. We are not hundreds of millions. We are not football. We are not tennis. We are not even golf.
But we are subsidized by the public, which
Absolutely.
Seems to be interested in you singing. So what is your role then?
My role in this? My role?
The role of opera in a society.
Oh, it's many things, but it's also the beauty of it. It has changed with time. Before it was the thing with theater and maybe chamber music. 200 years ago, it was the thing to go out to. Today we have sports, we have theater, we have cinema, we have a lot of things. But opera, in the end, and classical music, whether it's a musical hall, it's a philharmonie, it's an opera house, it's a chamber music hall, still today and for ages, I know it will not only survive, it will thrive, but it has to find, with honesty and humility, its rightful place in the society. And it means that today we singers, we opera singers, we stage directors, intendanten, if we try to sell opera as pop music, we are lying to ourselves before we are lying to the audience. Opera and classical music is cool, is great, but it's also a form of art that takes time to be developed in the brain of people. The fact that opera houses today are opening their doors to the younger generations, to school, that are making tickets available for 10 euros is amazing, and it has to stay like this. But it is only to give a taste to these young people to what they might love in 20 years. And this is what the place opera has. It doesn't gather hundreds of millions of people. It gathers hundreds of thousands of people. And for that, you have to accept the rightful place of music in the world is to have its right size.
Yeah.
And let's come just 1 second to business. When you take a platform, whatever platform where you can hear music with a subscription, classical music and opera are 3 to 5%.
Yes.
Not 30 to 50. 3 to 5% of a platform is classical music and opera. This is
to Mozart's time. This is what Anoncourt says. Not every maid in Mozart's time went to a Mozart opera.
And saying that we are in a crisis is true because we have been lying to ourselves, not because the reality is the reality. The reality is 3 to 5% of the tracks that are put on whatever platform today is classical music and opera. And more it is instrumentalist, more and more it is chamber music and symphonies, maybe less vocal, but this is a fashion. It will change. It goes up, it goes down, and suddenly in 10 years we will say we want new recordings of full operas, which has totally disappeared now. But it will come back, not because I trust and I hope, just because I know that fashion come and go. And so for that, accepting that this is a niche, It has always been in the time of Mozart and the time of today. But the lie that we have been telling ourselves in the past 20, 30, 40 years to try to make opera open for everyone, but it does not interest everyone.
It's the three tenor effect. Who thought, now we are so famous and we open opera for everybody, but they never came, you know?
That was amazing for the world of opera and the world of singers, but it was a time, though it was the peak of the world of television. It was before internet. It was before platforms.
That would three channels on television and football world championship at the same time.
And the Olympic Games in Barcelona. And there was Freddie Mercury. No, but not only for me. Yeah. Remember, I think it was 92.
Mercury, Montserrat Caballé.
Exactly. That was the peak of the television time. Now we are in a different time, but opera and classical music still has the same space. But it also what comes to what do we give as a space to culture, to literature, to music? Yes, it is going through a challenging time and we have to fight. Now we are in a fighting mode for the 5-10 next years to see how we make it survive and we don't just neglect it.
Yes. And I think the fight is all about what you said. We mustn't compromise to compromise ourselves.
Exactly.
Because
we can make some compromises.
I think the situation is that lots of intendants or directors are feeling a pressure, a public pressure, a political pressure, a pressure from every side, and they are afraid that they vanish, that they lose audience, and they don't trust their own art anymore.
Absolutely.
And perhaps that's the problem, yeah.
An intendant has to, I mean, I would not want today to be an intendant. We are all
wait 10 years, yeah.
Well, exactly. We are all criticizing, oh, if I was there, I would do that, and it would be, it's just easy, you just do that, and you just do that. I
like hear football that, coaches, you know.
Exactly. The world is full of the best coaches of Manchester City. Or Manchester United, or the Bayern Munich. But in the end, there is only one that makes the decision, and it's always, sorry to say, the asshole that makes the bad decision. Pardon my French.
Yeah.
But today, it's the same with intendant. What does an intendant have to do? An intendant has to convince the mayor. He has to convince the minister. He has to convince the budget.
Good job, yeah.
All these people have to be convinced to keep giving money to an institution. And at the same time, it's what are you doing new for me to keep doing this, giving this money? Well, we are going to try something special with this new
techno music,
this new bohème, and we are going to do something visual and this, because if you just, you have to accept that there is an aspect that is a museum. We protect a repertoire that has been composed hundreds of years ago, and that is our Bible.
Yeah, we protect it. Reproduce it. In our time, every time.
We reproduce it to our time, in a time where the racism that you see in operas is not possible anymore today. The misogyny, the way women are treated in the operas is not possible. So we adapt it. But it is also good that we don't totally erase it, because it is a mirror of what the society was. What you see in Zauber Flöte, how women are treated, how black people are treated, it is very important that we don't erase it, not because we support it, but just to show how it was before, where we come from. We come from a time where we treated foreigners like this. We treated Germans or French or Jews or whatever like this, and women like this. It's very important that this stays a mirror of not only the society of today, but also our history. But to come back to being an intendant, I would not want to do that today, because the pressure that you have is ticket sales, ticket sales, ticket sales. How do you sell tickets if you don't reinvent yourself? This is a challenge of every day. And we singers, we a bit have, I have to say, this is our hypocrisy. We have a very easy life. We jump from one place to another and we're like, criticize here and criticize there. But I am not here in this theater every day having to convince a sponsor to give money for my singers, for my chorus, for my orchestra.
In the deep ground of classical music, there is fear right now. And I think fear is always a bad thing, you know. And fear very often leads to panic reactions, you know. Mm-hmm. And the panic reaction could be to open it to everybody. On the other hand, we see that governments or whatever don't do musical education at schools, you know. So on the one hand, everybody expects opera to be successful. On the other hand, nothing is done that that the general knowledge you need for opera is there anymore, you know. So we have a situation of fear, and what we see is a reaction of panic, you know?
I feel that we are in a panic mode a bit everywhere, and it is true that it is true and it is also not true, because I hear a lot of things in Germany, in Switzerland, in Austria, in France about sensibilisation, meaning that we bring schools to a concert hall, we bring schools to opera. More than before, but still not enough, that it feels that we are in a panic mode where we feel that the boat is sinking and the opera world and the classical music world is about to disappear. First, it is not true. But let's not lie to ourselves. We are in a very tricky time where money doesn't flow. There is not this cash flow coming as it used to be. And we have to be careful about how we create things. We have to think strategically about the ecology of these things too. When you do a new production in an opera house, it costs not only a lot in money, but it costs also ecologically. How do you keep this production long-term, 10 to 15 years in an opera house, that it doesn't end up in the fire or through the garbage very quickly? This kind of thinking, this kind of long-term, medium-term, short-term thinking is very important. But we are in a, as you said it yourself, there is a bit this panic mode of we are about to disappear. We are not about to disappear, but we have to change the mode of thinking and we have to adapt to a new world. And the new world is less money, and maybe with less money we can do more, but we have to adapt and we have to know how to do it.
And we have to be faithful to what we do, exactly. Because that's the only chance we have to do the real thing, even though less people will come or we will have less money, but we have to do the real thing.
Look at the challenge of the summer festivals. It used to be a summer without going to Bayreuth and Salzburg. It was not a summer before. And now you have more and more festivals. You have Verbier coming. You have Grafenegg. You have Aix-en-Provence. You have Lucerne. You have Santa Fe. And now all these festivals probably one day will begin to open satellites in Asia, in the United States. So before it used to be an expedition of 3 weeks. Like the composers were going to Paris for 3 weeks. 3 months, 6 months to propose their new opera. The audience was going to Salzburg for a long time. Now, we have less and less time. We have to travel very quickly. We have to find the practicality of traveling. And it is more and more difficult. And for summer festivals, for opera houses, at the end of a season, do you know what the end of June is for an opera house? It is a nightmare. It is a nightmare to fill and to sell tickets. Well, it means we have to adapt our thinking. Maybe we have to shorten parts of the season to make it longer to another part, because we have to adapt to what the audience needs and can be.
So we can shrink to become better?
I think first we have to, it's about se remettre en question. How can we survive and how can we adapt? And so I think we have to shrink. We have to accept that a part of the seasons, the amount of work is shrinking, but we can maybe give it better in another way, in another principle of work. To be more efficient doesn't mean changing, going from 6 weeks of rehearsals to 2 weeks of rehearsals, because then it means that it's not the same quality of work. But I think that in the world of, can I say brands?
Yes.
In the world of Microsoft, in the world of Google, in the world of Apple, in the world of hyper-communication, in the world of Zoom, Teams, all these ways to communicate, we can actually do better. Because it feels that the opera world is still stuck a bit in the old ways. And I think that we can do actually much better for the audience with a bit less, but we have to know how to do it. And this
classical music is the gold standard. If you go to economies, you know, there is the burrs with all the ups and downs, but classical music is something like the gold standard. It's the tradition of, if you want to have something safe,
How do you think, for example, I give a very simple example. More and more orchestras who do tour, who do concerts, ask the singers and the instrumentalists to have less and less days off between performances. They say, we can't afford, and that's a reality. We, the orchestra, or we, the institution, cannot afford anymore to have a three-week tour. We are going to have to do a two-week tour. It means that sometimes you will have 2 days in a row concert, then day off, then 3 days in a row concert, then 2 days off because we are traveling. Listen, we have to adapt. At the time of Callas, at the time of Tito Gobbi, at the time of Siepi, it was unthinkable to have this, but also it was not the same world. EasyJet and Ryanair did not exist. Today it exists, so we have to set new examples of how to be efficient, but by keeping the same level of quality. How do we do that? We adapt. We also know much more things today than we knew 60 years ago about our health, about traveling, about medicine. We can be so much better. It doesn't mean that we are better than the ones before. They didn't have the same technology, but there are more singers than ever. There are more beautiful voices than ever before. Just how do you make everyone cohabitate, sing, work with less and less time? Well, you just adapt. It means that the orchestra has to adapt, the conductor has to adapt, the singer has to adapt. The sponsor has to give just a tiny little bit for everyone to be sort of happy. And in the end, the most important is the truth of the stage and what you give to the audience, no matter how hard the conditions are for the audience. You always to give the best artist or the best product. You will choose your poison.
I would have loved to talk about your repertoire and everything else, but we do that the next time we meet each other.
Absolutely.
Because it was so interesting. Thank you very much, Benjamin.
Thank you very much, Axel.
Das war ja der Podcast von Backstage Classical. Für tägliche News aus der Welt der klassischen Musik schaut doch einfach bei uns vorbei auf www.backstageclassical.com. Und wenn ihr Kommentare, Anregungen, Ideen oder auch Beschwerden habt, dann schreibt uns doch einfach unter redaktion@backstageclassical.com. Wir lesen das natürlich sehr genau und werden das auch in unsere Arbeit einbeziehen. Wenn ihr Lust habt und mehr hören wollt, dann abonniert diesen Podcast, denn dann hören wir uns schon bald wieder. Ich freue mich drauf. Macht's gut, haltet die Ohren steif.